Coming up on KWBU, a conversation with Martha Barnett, co-host of the public radio program Away With Words, which airs Sundays at 2 p.m. on KWBU. Martha was in town for the Literacy Texas annual meeting. She stopped by the station and sat down for a conversation with Joe Riley.
You have always loved words. Is this right? Have you always loved words?
I have. I can remember as a kid just being on my mother's lap and her reading poetry to me and just feeling the rhythm of it. And it was always so much fun. She was an English teacher, so I learned grammar by osmosis. It was very easy for me to do that. And then I had lots of adventures with words. I talked with you before about the fact that I was flunking out of ancient Greek in college, and I found a tutor, an elderly man from Latvia, who spoke a whole bunch of languages, and he started tutoring me in ancient Greek and helping me see the connections among words that all arise from a common linguistic ancestor. And it was just a totally different way of approaching language and helping me to understand that there's a whole world in a single word a lot of times. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, language is fossil poetry.
I love that phrase.
Yeah, I do too.
Language is fossil poetry. And so digging back into those, and we hear that every week when we listen to your show, you talk about the roots of these words.
Right. I feel so fortunate to be able to do that every single week. It's a passion project for me.
I want to back up just a little bit and talk about how did the show get started? How long have you been doing Away With Words?
I have been doing Away With Words for 12 years now. It had an earlier incarnation with two other language experts, Richard Lederer, who's the author of Crazy English and Anguished English, which were fun bestsellers back in the day about just how nutty the English language is. Why do we park in a driveway and drive on a parkway? Why do our feet smell and our noses run? What's that all about? So Richard and Charles Harrington Elster were originally the hosts of the show. And the show started at KPBS in San Diego, where I live now. And so I joined the show shortly after Charles Harrington Elster left. And so Richard and I did the show for a couple of years. And then Richard retired, and my current co-host, Grant Barrett, came on. And we were at KPBS. And then we left and formed an educational nonprofit that now distributes the show across the country.
Uh-huh. Have you seen the show change at all since you first started?
Yes, definitely. I was much more of a stickler when we started. You know, as I said, I was an English teacher's kid, and I was very particular about grammar. But one thing that I've learned over the years is that there are all different kinds of Englishes, for one thing. I mean, there's Jamaican English, there's Irish English, there's a multitude of Englishes, and there are ways that grammar helps you communicate clearly. But I'm much less of a stickler that there's much more diversity and variation in English than I ever imagined. And over the years, I've learned not to be so judgmental, and to listen more and celebrate that diversity in English. For example, I was looking for an apartment in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, and the guy was showing me around, and he said something about, oh yeah, that lamp needs fixed, and then he kept talking, and a few minutes later, I said, so I'm guessing that you're from Western Pennsylvania or Eastern Ohio. And he said, yes, how did you know? And it was because he used the term needs fixed, which is a vestige of Scots-Irish language. It's a vestige of the migration there of people settling from that tradition. And so some people say, oh, I hear, you know, needs washed or needs fixed, and I just cringe. Well, I just take nerdy pleasure in realizing that people talk differently.
Are some people, do you think, intimidated by the idea of proper grammar?
Oh, yes. And when I first started the show, I would meet people and they would find out what I do and they would be terrified to say another word. And there's really no need for that. I think that that it's really not rocket science. And that if you're making yourself clear, then you're making yourself clear.
Years ago, I was certified to teach English. I never taught, but I did the student teaching. And when we did our grammar units, the class just froze. And what I had to say to them was, there is really nothing to be afraid of. You already understand grammar.
Right.
You just don't. If you didn't understand grammar, you couldn't communicate. You wouldn't understand what I was saying, and I wouldn't understand what you're saying. It's just a matter of working out some of the details, the fine points of it.
You know, you have a way with words. You really do. I'm going to borrow that because that's the way I feel about it, too.
Texting where everything is abbreviated, and sometimes if you're old like me, you don't know quite what it's said, but LOL and texts. What do you make of this new form of communicating?
Well, I think anytime a technology of writing changes, people get a little bit bent out of shape and nervous that it's going to destroy the English language. I mean, and that idea goes all the way back to Socrates and Plato. There are passages in Greek literature where this or that person is worrying that reading, and I'm here for the Literacy Texas Conference. There are passages in Plato where someone worries aloud that reading is going to mess up people's brains because you will be basically outsourcing your memory, and it will be like a dead portrait to see text because you can't talk to a person in a portrait, and in the same way you can't interact with a text. And so people, even back in antiquity, were concerned about this scary new technology that was writing, at a time when most people were illiterate. And when the typewriter came along, people were concerned that this was somehow going to mess with the way that we think and the way that we write. And I can't imagine writing without a keyboard today. And so I really think that concerns about texting are misplaced. I mean, people worry that it ruins children's writing or students' writing, and that just hasn't been shown to be the case in terms of literature. And I will tell you that I find it really useful. I use LOL or U sometimes, the letter U, when I'm texting, but generally, people seem to understand that if you're texting, you can use a different register of speech than if you were writing a formal paper. It's sort of like you wouldn't wear overalls to a job interview and you wouldn't wear a tuxedo to a beach party. It depends on the context. And most people seem to understand that one type of writing is appropriate in one place and one type of writing is appropriate in another place. And beyond that, with predictive text now on phones, my phone predicts most of, or not most, but my phone guesses what I'm going to say, so I don't have to write the word out. It writes it out for me, so I'm not so worried about that. I love emojis. I think you can have a lot of fun with emojis, and I do.
My phone often writes the wrong word out for me, but yes.
That's kind of fun to do. There's some game that you can play where you write your own epitaph by just choosing the next predictive text word, and I think mine was something like, Martha thought that this would be great, or something like that, and that's your epitaph.
It's a call-in show, Away with Words. Mm-hmm. I've noticed a lot of the calls are from Texas. Have you noticed that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we sort of have to try to be careful not to have too many Texas callers. I think part of that is the fact that Texans love to talk about the way y'all talk. And you have so many of those wonderful words and phrases and linguistic heirlooms, we call them, those things that are handed down and such colorful ways of talking. And yes, we get a lot of calls from Texas.
So In other parts of the country, you can tell when somebody's from Texas?
In other parts of the country,
Can you tell when somebody's from Texas?
I often have a good guess, and it's more the accent than the phraseology. I don't know how to describe. I mean, it's almost like describing wine or something. It's like there's a richness and a warmth to a Texas accent. I'm sure Grant would do a better job of talking about more of the details of phonetics and all that. But to me, people sound like people I'm fond of here in Texas.
I have found that to be the case as well. People I'm fond of, yes, and so there's not a time to stop and think, oh, this is what you sound like. It's just more, this is more who I think of when I think of you. People I know, people I'm fond of. And something about Texas and the Texas accent, I think, does that.
Yeah, it's a feeling.
Yeah. Have you ever been stumped by a caller?
Oh, gosh, yes, all the time.
I never notice it on the air if you're ever stumped by a caller. You always have good answers.
Well, we have a lot of databases at our disposal. We also get a lot of the same questions again and again. But sure, there have been some calls where we have to say we don't know, and we'll put it out to our listeners. You know, we'll turn on the flashing red light and the alarm and ask our listeners for help, and they always come through. So then we follow up and share what we've learned from our listeners. I mean, that's part of the joy for me of the whole show, is that we learn so much from the people who call us and write us.
Have you and Grant ever been at odds over an answer?
Oh, yes. Yes, we tend to. He's much more well-versed in the world of slang than I am, and he's also more permissive than I am. I mean, I've come around, but he tends to. We're sort of our paths, I think, are merging. So more and more, I think we are in agreement about things.
Can you anticipate each other? Kind of what he's going to say?
Well, that's funny, because it is sort of a radio marriage, only on the radio, but. The great thing about working with Grant is that he's forever surprising me with stories or knowledge he has that I would never expect him to know. And he says I do the same for him. But
well, you can tell the relationship as a radio relationship is a good one between the two of you. And I think you work well together, working off each other, what you have to say.
Well, that's nice to hear, because we're sort of, as the British say, chalk and cheese. We're very, very different. I mean, he lived in New York City for many, many years, and I grew up in Kentucky. And so I'm on, my producer says I'm on panda time. I tend to be really leisurely in the ways that I think and talk about things. And Grant's a New Yorker who who talks really quickly and thinks really quickly.
What are some of the favorite of the questions you've had to answer?
Oh, man. Well, there are different categories of questions that we deal with again and again. There are the questions where people say, I moved across the country. I moved from Texas to California. I moved from Texas to New York City, and I used the word TUMP, for example, T-U-M-P. And people looked at me like I had two heads. If I had $2 for every time we get an email that has the phrase and it looked at me like I had two heads, we wouldn't have to do fundraising. so there are those regional expressions that people take from one part of the country, and you know, they're expressions that you've grown up with your whole life, and they're just part of your personal fabric. And then you move someplace and you cannot believe that people don't know the word or phrase. So that's one. We enjoy disputes. A lot of times a couple will call us. We had a couple of truck drivers who drive across the country together, and they had a dispute over a word. And so we like to mediate there in terms of pronunciation and that kind of thing. And then there are the people who just want to know the history of this word or that.
Mm-hmm. What does TUMP mean?
What does TUMP mean? Do you not know what TUMP means?
What does TUMP mean?
Well, tump is like, don't tump over that canoe, or I just tumped over my water.
I just needed some context.
You
there.
Did?
I needed, there's got to be listeners who don't normally use the word tump.
Is that right? Well, yeah, maybe here in Waco. I don't know.
Well, I'm not originally from Waco.
Oh, you're not. So where are you from?
I grew up in South Carolina.
Oh, that's right. Okay. All
right. So I actually heard a promo recently where you were talking about tump, and I'm going, okay, what does that mean?
Is that right?
Now that you say it, give it context, like, oh, sure, okay.
Oh,
now, in context, I would know exactly what that meant.
Okay.
How do you pronounce P-E-C-A-N?
P-E-C-O. That nut?
That nut, yes.
What do I say? I say pecan.
Well, I do, but, too.
Do you?
I do.
Okay, because there are pecan fans out there.
Yes,
right?
There are.
Yes.
There are. I sometimes correct them, but it's okay. Pecan is a good pronunciation.
Yeah, yeah. Louisville is famous for its pecan pie, so that's what I grew up saying. But that's another thing where if you grow up saying a word a certain way and then you hear somebody else pronounce it differently with equal fervor, it is jarring. We really need to learn to listen to each other and just celebrate those moments, I think, rather than take offense.
Yes, and laugh with whoever you're talking with.
Right.
That's a good thing. How important, I'm going to change directions a little
okay.
bit, because you're talking about this to a wide audience. You're on public radio.
Mm-hmm.
How important is public radio?
How important is public radio? It is vital. Oh, my goodness. Talk about something that feeds your curiosity, that teaches you every day. It's absolutely vital. I don't know what I would do without public radio, without my local public radio station, KPBS, or any of the public radio stations that I listen to on apps on my phone. It's just a place that celebrates intelligent conversation where ideally we're not talking over each other. And our show is really, as I keep coming back to this word, our show is really about listening to each other. And it really doesn't matter what part of the political spectrum you occupy. You know, we all share language, for one thing. We all share curiosity, ideally. And I depend on public radio to nurture that curiosity and keep me curious and feed it.
What's your favorite, besides Away With Words? What's your favorite shows?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's see. Well, certainly Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And I think in that league is Chris Boyd on Think. I listen to that from time to time because I follow her on Twitter, and when I see a topic I'm really interested in, I'll listen to Chris's show. Let's see, I'm trying to think what else I have on my phone that I listen to. This American Life, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I do improv comedy in San Diego, so I listen to a couple of improv podcasts. Off book, which is musical improv, which is what I do. And I started doing improv because I started out as a writer and I didn't know if I could do radio. I was terrified of public speaking. I had the world's worst public speaking phobia ever. My mouth would dry out and my cheeks would stick to my teeth and they would start clicking like dentures, and then I would try to drink water and I would spill it all over myself. But when this opportunity came up to apply for the radio job in San Diego 12 years ago, I just thought, here's an opportunity to reach hundreds of thousands of people to talk about my passion, about words and how we use them, and the linguistic fossils that are in our vocabulary. And maybe I could get over this public speaking phobia and do radio. And now that's what I do. But I mention all that because that's why I started doing improv comedy, in part to keep up with my New Yorker co-host, to learn to think on my feet faster.
I have a few things, just little notes that I jotted down. One thing I wanted to talk to you about, you were here for the Literacy Texas
mm-hmm.
conference,
mm-hmm.
and the connection with literacy and the importance of that. I wonder if you would talk a little bit about literacy.
Well, we love collaborating with literacy groups. We collaborated with the Aberg Center in Dallas. I just came from, Grant and I went to San Antonio a couple of weeks ago and worked with San Antonio Youth Literacy there to do a fundraiser for them. And so I jumped at the chance to come to the Literacy Texas Conference because, again, literacy is the key. It opens doors to entirely new worlds. I mean, and there's such a need for help with literacy in this state. What is it? Is it 33 million? There's some large number of adults who struggle with literacy, who you might not even realize are struggling with literacy, but maybe they have trouble reading their prescription or reading street signs and that kind of thing. And then getting beyond that, just the doors that literacy opens in terms of learning and literature and just having a more fulfilled life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Back to the, I don't mean this to be about me at all, but when I was student teaching again, mm-hmm. one of the students, weeks into my student teaching, mm-hmm. I was asking the students to bring their reports and read them in front of the class.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought his, he wanted to do his first and didn't want to hand it to me. And he brought his piece of paper and he stood in front of the class and gave his report. And I went and looked over his shoulder. And there was really, it was gibberish. There was nothing there. He was making it up.
Wow.
And he couldn't read. And he had faked his way halfway through high school.
Mm-hmm.
But the shame for him that was
yes.
involved.
Yes.
That's why he wanted to be first, so that he'd done his and proved that, yes, mm-hmm. he can do a report.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
But again, the importance of language, the importance of being able to know the words and how they go together, written word and literacy just makes such a difference in our
right,
lives.
Right, right. And so many of us take that for granted. But if you don't have it, you're at a disadvantage.
Yes. A couple of things that I wrote down. One is a short quote and from your story where you said, language is not arbitrary. This is not you. This mm-hmm. is your tutor said, mm-hmm. language is not arbitrary.
Language is not arbitrary.
What did he mean by that?
He meant that that all these grammatical rules and the words themselves, they didn't just spring up out of the ground. They all come from someplace. So, for example, today I was talking about the fact that the Greek word podos, which means of the foot, is related to the Latin word pedis, which means of the foot, and we see it in words like pedestrian and pedal and pedestal. It's also related to the Spanish word for foot, pie. All of these languages that come from the Indo-European language, the prehistoric language, they're all connected in ways that we don't really realize until we start pulling at a thread, and then it all sort of reveals itself.
So it's all and I would say, from that, it appears that it's growing. So language, English especially, is connected to so many different languages. But clearly, I mean, Greek and Latin were related. Sanskrit, mm-hmm. you mentioned Sanskrit. I mean, words move from one language to another, and the meaning stays and then grows within that language. So
right.
do you see growth of some sort, evolution in happening in the English language?
Oh, absolutely. I like to say that if all the languages gave a party, English would be the one that's going around to everybody's plate saying, are you going to eat that? Can I have that? I mean, English is such a diverse language. Its strength is in its diversity, the fact that we borrow from all different traditions and all different kinds of languages. And even today, we're just incorporating new words all the time with the internet and mass media. We're able to make that process go even faster, or it's going faster on its own.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, and this is not a direct quote because I didn't write fast enough, but something you talked about, aha moments, mm-hmm. hiding in plain sight. What's an example?
Okay. Well, I will just tell you that when you and I first started talking, I thought this has got to be an on-air guy at the radio station because he has this voice that's mellifluous. And see, when I see the word mellifluous, which means having a beautiful sound, right? When I see a word like mellifluous, I'm thinking about the fact that it comes from Latin words that mean literally flowing with honey. It's related to, for example, the Spanish word for honey, which is miel. And so I feel like I'm forever walking around with X-ray goggles, I guess. Did I answer your question or did we go someplace else?
Talking about the aha.
Yeah. So I have these aha moments all the time when I realize that, that must be related to this or that Latin word or this or that Greek word. I saw the word symposium in the literature for the Literacy Texas Conference. And I thought, symposium, well, that comes from Greek words that mean literally a drinking together. The sim is like in symphony, and the posium is related to words like potable and potion. So a symposium originally was a drinking party. I'm not sure that that's what they're having at Literacy Texas.
And as you say that, I think of one that I had one of your examples when you talked about gladiolus.
Ah.
And I have always thought that that sounded a lot like gladiators.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a connection there because you said it's for sword?
There absolutely is a connection. Yeah, the name of the flower, gladiolus, I used to think when I was much younger that it was gladiolus because you were glad to see it bloom. But no, it comes from the Latin word gladium, which means sword, and as you suggest, is indeed related to the word gladiator, the guy who uses the sword. So it's called gladiolus because it's a little sword if you look at the leaves. And you see a reflection of that in German where the word is Schwert lily, Schwert being related to English sword. It's like a sword lily. See, don't get me. It's like, welcome to my brain. It's busy in there.
It was an aha moment for me. It's like, oh, I see another connection. So
yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that you said, again, not direct, but stories contained in a single word about who we are and where we come from. Expand on that a little bit.
Well, there's just so much history involved in a single word. I think of eponyms, you know, words that are named for people. Like, why do we call that fish a guppy? It was named for a guy, Mr. Guppy. I think he was a scientist or ichthyologist or something like that. Leotard comes from the name of the guy who invented it. Jacuzzi was named for somebody named Jacuzzi. Boycott was named for it comes from a word from the name of somebody named Boycott. So for me, studying etymology is a great way of sort of backing into history and discovering things that you would never discover otherwise. And it's sort of not just painless but joyful for me.
Wonderful. What's next for you? What are you dreaming about? What's next in the works?
Oh my gracious, what am I dreaming about? Well, I'm excited to say that Grant and I, my co-host Grant Barrett, and I are putting together a tour. We're going to be touring around the country in a few months and doing some of what we do on the show out in the world. It won't be actual recordings of the show because technically that's a little bit challenging, but we're going to bring the good word about words to communities all over the country, so we're excited about that.
You've been listening to Joe Riley talk with Martha Barnett from Away With Words. She was in town for the Literacy Texas annual meeting and stopped by the station. This conversation was recorded August 6th in the KWBU studio. It's archived on our website at kwbu.org. You'll find it on the Away With Words page.